Another edition featuring segments of history, definitions, and music from the African-American diaspora, presented by student host Justin Hill. Now, music is like poetry, and it has a message, and history is like a diamond and shines clear to the truth. You see, words do have meaning that we may and can comprehend like definitions, and news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now, I'm asking each and every one of you listening, the Quest listening audience, to pull back the musical curtain to see and hear the contributions of our diaspora. And you're sure to find our Quest moment where we attempt to make waves, indeed vibrations. So thank you for joining us to hear a different perspective of our community. Now, every time lately when I mention perspective, that all depends on your view from where you're standing or either listening from. So, you know, let's see, what perspective do you have for saying good morning? Good morning, Mr. Harris. How are you?
Good morning.
Okay. All right. And good morning, Tanisha Gardner. Miss Gardner, good morning.
Oh, bonjour. Good morning, y'all.
that must be a long distance perspective. You definitely had me on edge. Is she there? And absolutely you're there. Bonjour. Right, and without any further ado, thank you so much, Tanisha, right, for waking us up. The real deal, our student host with his first segment, Justin Hill. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning, everybody.
All right, so feel free to start with your first segment. Take it away.
This is student host Justin Hill. And it is now time for my first segment of diamond. History is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past selves, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply in your balance for yourself. And my diamond segment is on Paul Cuffey. And he was a great man of energy and resolve. He was born on the tiny island of Cuffey Hook. As a young teenager, he built small boats and traded among the Massachusetts Islands, as his father had done for many years. Later, he shipped aboard a whaler owned by the prominent and large family Quaker merchants and whalers of New Bedford. A few weeks before the end of the Revolution, Cuffey married a local Native American woman. Eventually, he opened a store in New Bedford to sell the goods he imported. And that is it for my first segment of today. I thank God for listening.
Oh, wow. Is there anything more significant about Mr. Cuffey that you can share with us? Outside of, you know, what was the most significant thing about who he was? I guess that's my question.
The most significant thing he did was, he was hardworking and he was making boats. Then after a while, he owned his own store, and then he was selling the boats and the things that he made.
Okay. Now I'm gonna be honest, there are some more significant things about him. Now you did mention him, first of all, he was a wealthy man. That's one of the significant things about him. And during the war, one of his ships that he used to import and export was put in embargo by the United States because of the war. He had so much influence, he was able to have a meeting with the president of the United States, and they actually released his ship. And also, he was one of the first people to start a Back to Africa movement. And I think it was about 38 black people that he took back to Sierra Leone in Africa, including babies and children and women. Okay, and so, like, we talk about Marcus Garvey creating a Back to Africa movement, and other people as well. But this is one, Mr. Coffey is one of the people that I had never heard of. Okay, and those are some of the things that I'm going to need you, Justin, to understand the importance of, and significance about him. Right now that I mentioned that, Tanisha, had you ever heard of him, and do you want to chime in with a comment?
No, this is the first time I ever heard of him, and wow, that is like so powerful. Like, our ancestors are really great. Just a simple fact, like you said, that he got his ship released, through the presidency. That's powerful that he even had that type of connection, and especially being wealthy at that time. So it kind of makes us think now, do our communities really have to be the way that they are? And it's like, how can we really transform our communities? Because, like you said, in that time, or when we look out through history, how we had, like beautiful black-owned towns, and they were prosperous. So it's like, how can we take the ideas from our ancestors in the past and really delve into our communities now and really change the concept or the definition of gentrification? And I think that's something to really look into, because if they could do it then, in the midst of slavery and coming out of slavery, it's no reason why we should be able to change our communities with the resources that we have now.
I totally agree. I also want to add to that, I think that a lot of people have bought into the narrative about us presented by somebody else. And hook, line, and sinker. You're born to go to jail, and that's it. You believe in it. I think it was Public Enemy. Mr. Harris, I'm coming to you. Don't believe the hype. Any comment about Mr. Coffey?
Well, yeah, first thing, I had heard of him before, and he was like one of the predecessors to Marcus Garvey about going back to Africa. And the fact that he was a whaler, see, back before fossil fuels was a big thing, people got most of their energy and stuff from whale oil. So the kind of monies and stuff that we're talking about is the same kind of monies that oil companies and stuff are making today. He was already a part of that situation. And he used his money and his influence, to help push forward not only going back to Africa, but even here, about building schools and stuff in the Massachusetts area. And he was a great brother that was doing a lot of things. And like Tanisha said, the blueprint is already here. You know, we've already done this. We need to have the fortitude and courage to, like, do it again so that we can stop begging for stuff.
Wow. Justin, I have to come back to you, and I need to ask you one important question, and that is, did you take notes on this? Justin, in all seriousness, did you get any of this extra information?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we're going to continue, and, of course, Justin will be back with another segment, but until then, you're tuned to Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio.
I met her on a walkway. Stared as she walked past.
We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory is won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory is won, even some will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. Before the victory is won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators, but we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. And we will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the corner.
So I say to you young folks, you got a big job. You have an important job. You haven't got much time. You young folks in America are going to have to write the history. A lot of people get uptight because don't like your long hair, don't like the way you dress. And what you young folks have been doing, that noise, that sound, might be the last one.
And we're back. You're tuned to Quest Youth Radio. And you just finished listening to a Martin Luther King speech and another song directly geared to our audience, young people. And Martin Luther King talked about a lot. And I guess pretty much his message is the truth will come to light after a while. You can't keep on perpetrating a lie and it continues on. But anyway, rather than that, me talking, I want to turn it back over to our student host, the real deal, Justin Hill, for his next segment. Good morning again, Justin. Take it away.
Welcome back, everybody. And it is now time for my next segment of definitions. This segment provides the listeners words and the meanings so that we can achieve together a common basis so we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definition controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And my definition segment is the Constitution. And a constitution is the basic principles and laws of a nation, state, or social group that determine the powers and duties of the government and guarantee certain rights to the people in it. It is also a written instrument embodying the rules of a politician or a social organization. And that is my segment of definitions. I thank you guys for listening. This is Student Host Jeffrey Hill on WSOU.
Okay. All right. There you have it. You have an opportunity. Tanisha, we're coming back straight to you. Do you have a comment on that particular word, constitution?
amendment. Yeah, we always have the power to amend things, especially when you think of the Constitution of each state, because I guess sometimes people get it confused with the federal and state laws, and sometimes we do have the power to create change, especially within these laws, and hold these laws accountable. And I think that's that's very powerful, that you can shape your own destiny. And I think that's what we have to remember, and that's why it's important to have lobbyists. And you know, especially within our communities, the only reason why big corporations or the senators be able to have so much wealth is because when they lobby, they lobby for their money. So what do we do in our communities? We need to start, you know, lobbying for the things that we need, but truly to the point where it's attached to the billions of dollars that's circulating throughout our country and throughout the world.
Yeah. I thank you for that input. Understanding the Constitution, I'm twofold. But before I say anything, I'm going to come to you, Mr. Harris, because maybe you'll calm me down a little bit. Any comment about the definition of the word Constitution?
No, well, the word itself, it just means a combination of the people who actually wrote it. Because everything in the Constitution, like Tanisha was saying, didn't really lead or didn't really include everybody. That's why we had to have amendments, you know, to, like, change the focus on what they were really trying to say. You know, but the way it was originally written, we had no part of it. And even the parts in our amendments were very limited. And, you know, the only person, you know, see, there's something about our people. We tend to believe in the truth of everything. We take everything at face value. Well, you said we was free, so we should be free. But we rarely look behind the scenes to see what's really going on. And that's part of the problem we have in our community, is that we're willing to accept other people, but not understand their intentions. And you know, and that's something that we need to come. And the Constitution is just, like Gil Scott Heron said, it's just a piece of paper. You know, it has nothing to do with the reality that what people have to deal with every day. And, you know, and the sooner we realize that, you know, the sooner we'll be able to make decisions that's going to be good for our community, not just for the community as a whole.
Okay, well, you know, Denisha, I'm coming back to you. Let's look at Paul Coffey. He looked at the Constitution was in existence, and somewhere, you know, he wasn't believing the hype. He wanted to go back to Africa, and this is the 18th century. And when we talk about Paul Coffey, this is somebody we hadn't heard of. I mean, I had never heard of him until, you know, recently when this came up for today's show. But somewhere along the line, he got the message about the Constitution. He understood. And even though he did still live here in America and created change here, he created, let's just say, another avenue for a different way of living. What do you think about that?
Yeah, he took his power back, and that's the power that we have. That's what I said about about lobbying but like you said, it's different structures. One, you got to remember how America came to be. America didn't come off of love and grace and peace. It came off of war. So when you keep that in mind, how do you trust your enemy? You can't, because you know your enemy is always going to be against you. So, however, like Coffey did, he took back his power, you know, and he was wealthy, and the simple fact that he understood the industry in a time that he was living in for him to make the moves that he did. So like you said, it's a combination of everything. One, you have to know thyself. Know what your worth is. And I think what happens in our communities, we forget our self-worth. And that's why they feel as though they can't do anything in their communities or change their communities versus in the past, they knew they struggled. It was right there in their face, and they knew they had to fight against adversity. I guess now we are blindsided because the illusion is like everything is okay, but it's not okay, you know? And then it's like, how do we still – How are we still fighting for reparations? How the hell do you take our ancestors to build America and we're still not in a position where we need to be? And these are the things that we really need to delve into, because society is truly changing, and especially when you're looking at these different policies that they pass in now, and especially when you think about major like players, like, for instance, the World Economic Forum, who's actually creating these policies called the Great Reset. So what are we doing that's going to change and for us to be better and not be what they want us to, what they're going to dictate us to for the change to be? And I think that's what we really have to realize when we think about our ancestors. They seen the opposition, they went against it, and they started to change it. So now what are we going to do in a time, in a realm now, where they want to take away our rights, especially globally? And I think that's something that we really have to pay attention to. And when you think about the Constitution, is it still going to exist when they are taking away our freedoms, especially the freedom of to be able to speak and to be able to tell the truth? And I think that's where we're at now. And it's very frightening that you can make things wrong right, and you're making things right wrong. So we're in a whole different type of society issues or what they're trying to create as normal, and it's not normal. So I think, like you said, looking at our ancestors and how much power they had to be able to go against the system and change it, we still have to do it now.
Mr. Harris, I'm going to come back to you. You know, the level of apathy, you know, I've heard so many times, you know, voting doesn't make a difference. It doesn't matter who you vote for. It's not going to make a difference for us. We don't need to be worrying about voting, right? Democrat or Republican, neither one of them are on our side. What do you say to that apathetic type of attitude? Especially when I posted a picture of Fannie Lou Hamer and Ella Baker this morning on my page, right? And if you don't know who those two people are, Justin and anybody out there, these are people who fought for voting rights. And Mr. Harris, while I'm on that, you know, along with this apathetic attitude, goes, you know, if this is what these people who are apathetic about voting usually say, I don't want to hear about how my ancestors fought for opportunity for me to vote, right? That don't make a difference now, and it really never did make a difference. They're going to do what they want to do anyway. Mr. Harris, I'm laying this type of attitude, this phrase at your doorstep right now. What do you respond? What is your comment to that?
All right. Well, again, this comes back to the Constitution. That's where the whole idea of this democratic vote and all this stuff's coming through. But like Tanisha was saying, it's not about what we think the whole ethereal trying to be, oh, this is just a wonderful thing. It's about money. And just like what Claude Anderson was talking about, we have our issues, but we got them upside down. We think that education is the way out when it's really economics. And, you know, and just like he was saying, you know, we have to pool our money to a point where we can do what every other community is doing, buying our politicians and being able to get them to do the type of things that we want them to do, because we own them. And that's what other communities do. Just like they had this, you know, when the Pacific Islanders and people from the Far East and stuff was having this big deal once COVID kicked in, everybody looked like, oh, my God, they're picking on Japanese people and Chinese people. You know, there was a federal mandate that's a hate crime now. And they only been messed with for like 100 years. I mean, like 1 year, actually, the whole COVID thing. Once Biden came in, he signed off the thing where Pacific Islanders, you know, they have protection and stuff under the right. They did the same thing for the LGBT community. You know, they signed laws specifically for them. And, you know, and we've been the one catching most of the hell for the last 300-400 years in this country. And we still can't even get the Emmett Till lynching law passed. And it's
well,
been
just
brought up to Congress 200-300 times. Say it again?
I said we just did. The anti-lynching bill was passed after 100 years, just recently.
Well, right, yeah, what I'm saying, but it had been introduced to Congress 200 times prior to that, you know. But the whole idea when it comes to voting is important because it's a feel-good situation. Now, if everybody else looked at politics, where voting was the essential part of it, then maybe we could get a lot of stuff done. But voting is just the okay, you go out there and you say who you want. But most politicians are not in it for the people that their constituents are. You know, they're in it for how can I get reelected and how can I get rich through the lobbyists and stuff that Nietzsche was talking about. That's their focus. And, you know, and until we understand that the golden rule means whoever got the gold makes the rules. It ain't got nothing to do with trying to do for others like you do for yourself. But then, you know, in the reality, it doesn't. You know,
the example we have is Paul Coffey.
Right, exactly. And the reason why he was able to do the things he was able to do was because he was financially in a position to have some kind of power. You know, that's how he was able to do the things he was able to do. And, you know, and that's part of the framework where we have to start dealing with, is that we have to start looking at things from a financial point of view, what really is important to our community, and what are we willing to financially sacrifice for? Because if we're just asking for stuff to get done, we'll be asking forever. But if we do things to get things done, and we make the moves to set up the situations to get things done, more things can happen. But right now, we're focused on the least important part of the whole political system, and that's the voting.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to let that be the last word on this particular topic as it pertains to the definition of the word constitution. And I want to just add that all politics are local, and your local politics are more important than, believe it or not, what's going on federally, you know, because the local politicians are the ones that can have your stoplight put up on the corner when your children are walking across the street to try to get to school. And so, you know, that's what's important. We're going to continue on musically. And Mr. Harris, yeah, thank you for getting it in. You definitely did calm me down. It's Quest Youth Radio.
going to turn it back over to our student host, Justin, for his next Diamond segment. Take it away, and good morning once again.
Like he said, what Mr. Bay said is last one to my next Diamond segment. This means like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, you are bound to find yourself. And my diamond segment is on Elizabeth Freeman. Elizabeth Freeman was born into slavery in a small town in the New York colony around the year of 1744. As an enslaved person, Elizabeth had no control over her own life. She and her sister, who were very young when they learned this lesson, Elizabeth attended a public reading of the new constitution. Unlike the Sheffield Declaration or the Declaration of Independence, which were public statements of the principles motivating the American Revolution. And that is my segment of Diamonds. I thank God for listening. This is student host Justin Hill on WSOU.
Okay, Justin, I'm going to have to go in on you again. What's significant about Elizabeth Freeman?
What's significant about her is that, first off, she was a great woman, and she did motivate some people when she grew up, and she did have to work hard. And just because she was a slave, that didn't mean that she wouldn't stop trying to be free.
And so what? Do you know? Let me tell you, because it doesn't sound like you do know, right? The thing that's significant about Elizabeth Freeman is, first of all, she was working in the house, and it said that she had listened to a conversation or overheard a conversation while working. And the person who had ownership at that time, she decided that she would take the law, right, of being free. She would take them to court and fight for her freedom. Well, what happened there is she actually won. She won her case in the court, and this was one of the first cases, right? And again, here we are. Elizabeth Freeman took that particular state. I forget what state it was, either New York or Boston. I can't remember exactly which one it is. Right. But she won the case. She won her freedom. And she didn't have to work for this guy any longer. And when she won her case, the judge said, okay, well, listen, she made the guy who was fighting against her, she made him the guy who had ownership on her, he had to pay for her legal fee. All right. And that story is significant because here we are in the midst of slavery, and she overhears the fact that she can fight for her freedom, and she actually does, right, and wins. And here's a story that I hadn't heard of. So, Tanisha, I'm coming to you once again, and what are your comments on this particular story?
And that's very powerful, and it goes right back to lobbying. it's all about the power of your voice. Like, the word is very powerful. Your voice is very powerful. And for Elizabeth to do it at that time and when, that shows a lot. So I guess at the end of the day, if you want to say it's about business, she took care of the business, and she got, you know, what she needed. So it just makes us think about the times that we're living in now. It's just like we could really transform our cities, you know, Mr. Harris saying voting is very important, and it's also one component. And the second component is definitely consistency and knowing what you're standing up for and what you're fighting for and that you don't give up. And I think that's what happens in our communities. You know, like you say all, you know, all politics are local. And especially when it comes to, like, for instance, the city of Newark, that it's important for the residents to go to the zoning board meetings or go to the planning board meetings, because the planning board shows you what the plan is for your city and to understand, you know, how everything is interconnected. And, you know, and we also have our own master plans. And so what do we want to see in our communities? And if we don't like it, we have a right to stand up against it. We have a right to appeal. Appeal is a very strong word. And especially if you talk about the Constitution, like we were just talking about, that it said it dealt in a Massachusetts state constitution where she's seen it and she actually challenged it. So that's what I'm saying. We could always amend constitutions, whether it be federally or through the state. And this is something to really think and to be able to, you know, especially manifest through Elizabeth Freeman for our own communities. I think that's really big, and we should definitely take from that playbook and really understand it. And like Mr. Harris said before, especially about the economic piece, it's so funny because when you think about America, how does so many immigrants come into our country and be able to open up so many different businesses? And then you think about our education system, that it doesn't teach you how to be an employer. It teaches you how to be an employee. So these are the things that we really need to take into consideration and truly be able to get our power back, especially with this upcoming electric vehicles that's coming through the country. I think as a people, we really need to tap into that industry, because that is definitely a white industry. So how do we get into it and understand it, especially technology, so we can make it work for us and not them turning against us and enslaving us through that type of mechanism?
Okay. I'm going to let that be your last word, and I'm going to challenge you on that being a white industry, because every time I turn around and I look at science and technology, it might be white on the surface, but it's sure enough black underneath. Okay. And that's when that's after I do pull out my Tanisha, after I pull out my shovel and do a little digging, I find out the truth about these situations. And you're laughing because you know it's true, right? Mr. Harris, I want you to kind of keep it short, but tap into Elizabeth Freeman. I just want to say a last bit of information about Elizabeth. Once she won her freedom, her owner offered her a job to come back to work for him, and she turned him down. Like, no, I don't think so, right? And the actual lawyer that represented her, she ended up working for him for pay. And she had established a relationship with the lawyer and his family. And when Elizabeth passed away, she was actually buried on the property of the lawyer who represented her in their family plot area. And I think that is a story of people working together and not seeing the significance of the color of the skin and understanding it's only one race and the human race. Anyway, I'm done. Mr. Harris, comment on Elizabeth Freeman, and then we're going to go to our next segment.
Yeah, well, you know, a kind of lot has already been said, but the fact that once she did win her case, it really opened up the floodgates for a lot of other people of color to challenge the courts and stuff for their freedom, so much so that the state of Massachusetts said, well, we might as well just bar slavery altogether, you know, because we're not going to keep going to court and giving these people their freedom. We might as well just say slavery is banned in the state of Massachusetts. And, you know, and that was the
precursor to Massachusetts doing that was the Elizabeth Freeman. And I like the way she changed her last name, because she wasn't always Freeman, but when she became a free person, then she changed her last name to Freeman.
I'm feeling that too. Justin, I want to turn it back over to you for your last segment of definition.
Welcome back, everybody. Like Mr. Bay said, there's not a time our last segment of definitions. This segment provides the whistleblower's words and the meanings that we can achieve together a common basis that we care or believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and how it defines for us. My definition segment is on the word determination. Determination is a positive emotional feeling that involves persevering towards a difficult goal in spite of obstacles. Also, determination occurs prior to goal attainment and serves to motivate behavior that will help achieve one's goal. And that is it for my segment on definitions. I thank God for listening. This is your host, Justin Hill.
Okay, Justin, I'm not going to let you off the hook. You talked about Paul Cuffey. You talked about Elizabeth Freeman. You talked about the Constitution. When you look at and you define just a moment ago the term determination, I want you to explain to us what is the importance of understanding the people that you talked about today and them being examples of determination.
Well, first, the importance of Paul Cuffey and Elizabeth Freeman is that Elizabeth Freeman was born into slavery, and she stuck up for herself, and she went to court, and she did win. And the importance of Paul Cuffey is that he was born into a small town, and then he started building boats, and then he opened up his own store, and then he opened up his own school in Massachusetts. And then being an example of determination is that they had a positive emotional feeling when they stepped up from herself, and she did win, and that with Paul Cuffey built his own school, he made kids happy, and they went to school.
Okay, now I want you to know that wasn't just the question, that was a challenge for you, right? And the challenge is for you to go back and do some more reading and look into these people so that you can speak from a knowledge base off the top of your head without just reading the information. It's time for our next segment with only 4 minutes to go, and that segment is curtains. You see, many times behind the curtains of the stage, musical artists have grown rich. But this is the segment where we talk about what the community has gained from a musical artist. And so that being said, I want to hand it back over to Mr. Shelton Harris for our segment of curtains.
Yeah, today we're going to focus on a brother, Nat Adderley Jr. You know, he was the nephew of Cannibal Adderley, who played with Miles Davis and a lot of other stuff. So he grew up in a musical family. His father was also really big in the music industry. But he was a piano player who, along with Marcus Miller, wrote like the first couple albums
of Luther Vandross's first two albums. He wrote almost every cut. And, you know, and he got Grammy nomination for, I don't know, it was a lot of Reason to Love or whatever. And but the thing that really clipped the stuff, Give Me a Reason, that's the one. You know, that was Grammy nominated. He wrote and produced Jump to It for Aretha Franklin. He wrote some songs for Beyonce, you know, and but he was kind of staying behind the scenes a lot. But he was a studio musician that played with a lot of jazz artists and R&B artists, you know. But what he really did was after that, he founded the Foundation for the Advancement of Music and Entertainment, the FAME School down in in the Maryland area, you know. And he was the director of their music program for years. And he was actually a local guy. I think he had a house in West Orange. You know, he lived there, like, I think he's still up in that area now. But he's really been instrumental in bringing music in the pop era. And he was writing a lot of stuff. That's like, you don't hear about people who actually wrote the song. You just, people get enamored with the artist who's actually singing the song. But, you know, but just singing the ideas of somebody else. And it's real important that he was able to do that. And I brought him up because I kind of was listening to some of his stuff. And it was important that people know that folks aren't just out there doing stuff for themselves. They felt it was important to stretch out and make sure that the kids and the younger generation understands that music is the universal language, and it's something that we need to continue to do and promote, especially live music.
This song,
okay,
by Nat Adderley is titled
And Humming.
Okay, Justin, I want you to close us out. It's been a very informative show with a lot of important content. Justin, take it away. Close us out.
I would like to thank everyone for joining us on Quest Keef Radio, which is the Quest Keef Radio. Today was a great show. And Quest Keef Radio is the best
radio.
Show is.
Okay. Absolutely. All right. So I want to thank Tanisha and Mr. Harris, of course. And back to Nat Adderley as we step out the door. Thank you again for tuning in.